Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Friday, the 27th of March.
Coming up today, we catch up with the Wexford manager who was the last to win a purely knockout hurling All-Ireland.
That residual Wexford feel for that game is in our DNA because they heard our parents talk about it. We heard our grandparents talk about it. I would be disappointed looking back on history to think we never sustained ourselves at the top.
Dundalk manager Vinnie Peart on the suspended season, although there has been some memorable moments already.
Duffy. Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is! That's an incredible strike, absolutely wonder strike at the back post.
Have I mentioned that I miss the football, Donegal?
Once or twice.
Plus, we've London GAA's take on the current crisis, and we're talking rugby club funding with Brendan Fanning.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more before we have the brilliant Hosier at 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, how are we doing?
Good. Another week.
Another week, we made it.
We're flying.
Yeah. I'm excited. Hosier on at 7. It's the best guest we've ever had.
Yeah, because we're usually on at that time. Fantastic.
There, Hosier, what are we going to chat to him about? And then they were saying, no, he's actually playing a concert. I was like, even better.
He's no Joe Canning, though.
It's a win-win. He's way better hair than Joe Canning.
You love everybody's hair.
Well, I went off mic. I do get envious of people's hair.
And nobody's going to be able to cut their hair at the moment, so you're going to have even more hair envy.
We're all going to look like Hosier in time. But it's a brilliant initiative, 2FM all week, looking out for the ISPCC. Marie, we're chatting about it. During a crisis, you know, things like this don't stop. Child abuse continues, and the ISPCC are dealing with, I think it's 59% increase in calls. So people can help and support by donating €4, and all they have to do is text childhood to 50300. And that's why Hosier's getting involved tonight, and there's going to be 2 weeks of it. So it's brilliant to have something to look forward to, isn't it?
Absolutely. If we could just organise a football as well, we'd be flying.
So I was thinking the exact same thing. If we could get them all to play five-a-side soccer while singing.
Virtually.
Marie, is it happening around your house? Well, I know it's happening around your house because it's the exact same thing that's happening with men around the place. Everyone's just going out the backyard and digging holes, isn't it? Billy's up the walls.
It's at a whole new level now. So this morning, a truck arrived and delivered 20 tonnes of hardcore, which is a mix of sand and stone. And my husband managed to somehow find 3 wheelbarrows, and he's wheeling all of that stuff through our house because he's building Astro. And to make it worse, all of his pals are just driving by and just talking out the window of the car because they can't help because of social distancing. So he's not making much progress. He's just standing around chatting to all the lads as they drive by.
Perched on the shovel, having the chat.
So we're never going to get the Astro, ever.
Do you know what? Is he like me? He's got the idea for a big project and he just won't finish it. So you're going to be looking at 20 tonnes out the front of the house for the next 4 years.
Probably, but the only thing is it's on the footpath as well, so he needs to get rid of it.
There'll be all sorts of complaints about it.
There will.
Yeah, we've seen different things. We've been chatting about social media. There has been, Afric O'Connell sent us a brilliant one and we'll play it shortly. But I've noticed an increase in people being brilliant on social media over the last while. I know there's annoying bits and I'd agree with you on some of it, but we have seen it used for some good. But my mom has turned into a WhatsApp queen. Like, honestly, I'm just waiting around for her to do the create, don't contaminate challenge with a toilet roll and some keepy uppies, Mario Callan of the back garden.
Is she doing voice notes?
She hasn't done a voice note yet, no.
There's the challenge for her now, Mario Callan.
There you go. She'd love that.
But you're right, it's brilliant. And we touched on the nurses last night and I mentioned that two of my sisters are nurses and they're doing fantastic work. But we were chatting on the family WhatsApp last night and I was panicking about everything. And they're just so cool. They're just talking about normal things. I want to talk about the coronavirus and they're just going about their day like they're doing a real normal job like us, but they're not. They're saving lives. And it's just funny to see the normality in the family WhatsApp group when you think it would be going crazy.
They're absolute heroes, and they got applauded at 8 o'clock last night, and they deserved every bit of it. To be fair, I'm probably speaking out of turn. You sent us a screenshot of it, and you're being all caring and concerned. And then they sent you a photo of, is it two of your nephews holding three chickens?
Yes. They had three chickens on a piece of wood. They live in a farm. I don't know what they were doing with the chickens.
They're living their life, though. That is brilliant.
Yeah, just getting on with it. I suppose that's all you can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, speaking of animals, you mentioned the dogs there.
Yes. This is dedicated to all people going a little bit crazy, around sport at the moment. Andrew Cotter, who would probably be best known, I'd know him from taking over from Bill McLaren in rugby, but as soon as you hear the voice, he's a Scottish broadcaster, does athletics, does tennis. And Africa O'Connell from The Breakfast at the weekend sent us on this, and we were just in knots at it.
Well, how fitting that it should come down to these two. Olive in her familiar black, five times the champion. Mabel, the rising star, winner last year. You can see how excited they are, but also feel the tension.
Get on with it.
And here it's in the crowd as we near the start of this final. And now they go, Olive away first, but a problem with Mabel's ball. That might cost her now, having to play catch-up. Both settling quickly into rhythm. You can see the contrast in styles. Mabel, heavy tail use, happy to be alive. Everything's amazing. Olive more steady, wasting little energy. Very much of the old Labrador school, eating's a serious business. Don't bollocks around wagging your tail. And Mabel, well, doesn't seem too upset. A bit of class there from the youngster, generous in what will surely be defeat, because Olive has won now. She's taken the title back at 7.5. Mabel looking to offer congratulations again to the dog who was her inspiration growing up. Once more, wonderful to see that spirit in the game. What a final we've had here. Great rivals, but great friends. Oh, and you see the swapping of bowls at the end. Join us again tomorrow. Live coverage of a snooze on the sofa, possibly. Bye for now.
It just shows that I probably didn't do the best of forward selling that. Apologies. That's Andrew Cotter with his two dogs, a beautiful golden Labrador and a black lab. And just, like everyone, just bored.
Time on our hands, that's a problem.
Making a brilliant broadcast of them actually eating their dinner.
So digging holes and commentating on dogs, that's what we've got so far. If anyone has too much time on their hands and they want to tell us what they're doing, please text us in to 51552.
Very good.
Now, Donica, we are going to move on to GAA because we don't have any at the moment because we know the coronavirus is playing havoc with sporting fixtures, but we are delighted to be joined by All-Ireland winning hurling manager Liam Griffin. Liam, there's lots to talk about, changing structures and no fixtures at the moment. But the last time there was a knockout championship in 1996, you were the Wexford manager. What was that time like?
Actually, it was fantastic. It was a roller coaster ride. So we hadn't won it for 28 years, which was too long for Wexford. So it became a fair festival for a while. But it was a great enjoyable journey, I have to say. And the knockout, I like the knockout because it's either do or die and that's it. And there's no second chances. And I actually liked that at that particular time. But the current championship is very good as well. But I'm glad we were part of that last historic one anyway.
Liam, I was reading up a little bit on you today, and I'm a Clare woman, as you might know, a Six Mile Bridge woman.
That,
so
I know that. It's a crow as well. Yeah, I know.
Davy Fitzgerald, but like I was lucky enough to be around during the 1990s, when for me hurling was everything, and it just reading back on the matches and 96 and of course 95 and 97 and all the great years, I was a kid, but to live through that and to be an adult and to experience it and to win in it, Liam, like it's just amazing. And I had goosebumps recalling the matches today.
Yeah, well, my regret is that I never wanted to be a manager, I can assure you. I'd like to have been out in the field, and that's where I would like to have been playing myself, but that didn't happen. So the next best thing, I suppose, is being part of the management team. But to be honest, you don't win All-Ireland as a manager. Players win the matches, not managers, in my opinion. Managers give them maybe a guiding place, but if they're not good enough, they won't win it. And I think we were really good that year. We had a good team spirit, and we had great guys there. And look, they were fantastic, and it was a joy to be with them. And it was a journey that we'll never forget, and Wexford people wouldn't forget it either, I think, for a while. So good memories, but it's the last century now, Marie.
Liam, what I notice is all the good managers say that exact line, that it's always to do with the players. And when you're in a player in a dressing room, you know how valuable they are. But just on Marie's point, the dancing at the crossroads, just everyone going crazy, a really special time. And you refer to it, it's a decade, you know, it's a long time ago now, but how special was it?
Well, look, I'm a proud Wexford man. I also played for Clare Marie when I was down there in the hotel school in Shannon. But and for Newmarket and Fergus, which I'm very proud of. We had a great team there as well.
I'm not sure I'm happy about that. Rivals there.
Stick a tour, Liam.
Yeah, but anyway, look, there's plenty of fairly haircut and stuff there. But, you know, I tell you, I actually was in Switzerland when we won Ireland, Wexford won the Ireland in 68. I was lying in the bed in Switzerland. I didn't know the result till the following Wednesday. And I'd been on a Wexford 21 team. I'd been a part of the panel. We'd won the All-Ireland in under 21. But for me, I couldn't understand why Wexford were down for so long. So I suppose I set out with missionary zeal and got a good team of people around me. Rory Kinsley and Seamus Byrne and Niamh Fitzpatrick was amazing as well. She was a sports psychologist, which wasn't a done thing at the time. And John O'Leary, a guy who was an analyst, and a fellow called Sean Collier. Now, we put a team of people together, just six of us, and I was trying to make sure that we got the best possible result, and I was driven because of the pride in Wexford, because I grew up at the end of the 50s and during the 50s when Wexford had what was supposed to be the team of the century with Nicky Rackard and the three Rackard brothers and teams like that. And I couldn't stand the fact that Wexford were no longer competitive and we weren't getting to All-Ireland finals. So, I was just driven and I put a lot of work into it together with all the other people. And yes, we did put a good team together. And I don't want to be on a cliche where I didn't do anything. I did plenty. But we still wasn't playing. You just can't deliver unless the players can deliver. And you know that, Dominic, as well. But I know managers played their part. But it was a trip of a lifetime. And I'm so blessed that I was part of it.
Liam, we don't know where we're headed in terms of the GAA Championship this summer. Ideally, the GAA would like it to stay as it is. But it's really hard to see that just considering the evolving situation that we're in. But if we are to head for a knockout championship, how difficult is it to win it? Like, is it harder than the current setup that we have?
No, it is harder because for the simple reason, like, you know, you take a Tipperary beaten by 11 points in the Munster final last year. Some people in the older tradition, and I'm not of that because I like the modern game except for the rooks. I don't like getting stats off of rooks. I think that's supposed to be rooks in our game anyway. But from it's difficult because we had a hard trip and we knew where we were going. We drew Kilkenny in the first round of that championship. And like when we got the draw, my point to the players was, that's it. That's the draw we want. We do not want a draw that's easy. We want to win, put our flag on the mountain and have had to really climb it. So we played Kilkenny in the first round. We beat them. We came back with a fantastic goal to beat them. Then we Dublin gave us the closest run and the nearest beating that we could have had. They were very close. And then we had a magnificent game against Offaly. It was absolutely a fantastic game of hurling. And they were a great team. And it was a privilege to play against them. They were a brilliant team. They were brilliant guys. They were great sportsmen. And I'm so sorry that Offaly are not staying up at the top because we need to be there. And then we went on to play Galway. We had a good win against Galway. It wasn't a classic. We had an All-Ireland win, which was a great win because we were down to 14 men. And on two occasions, which I'm very proud of, our backs never fouled once in the second half of the Leinster final against Offaly in a fantastic game of hurling, and never fouled once in the All-Ireland final in the second half, our backs. So we gave no frees away that were scorable. And for me, we had built our game on discipline because we mightn't have had the best hurlers, but I do believe we did deserve to win because we definitely had the best team in that year.
So we don't
and that's
have
not to be boastful. That's just what I believe.
Well, it was competitive back then as well. That's for sure. But this year, as it stands anyway, we don't really have anything to look forward to. But at the same time that we know of anyway, at the same time, we can't help but kind of speculate and preview. So if you're just to look at the teams now, Liam, who do you think, which county would be suited to knock out hurling?
I think Limerick are very well suited to knock out hurling. They're a big, strong, physical team and they're excellent hurlers. I think they're very good. Kilkenny are always suitable for knock out hurling. Kilkenny can beat the All Blacks on their day, if you don't mind that, Danica.
No,
they can.
I totally agree.
But you know, I think it's down between a handful of teams. But I don't know whether it's going to go well or not going to, but what I would just say is that the fixture system in the GAA is definitely in need of a massive overhaul to make the inter-county game better and the club game better. The club game is suffering greatly, and I'm part of the CPA, so I might as well declare my point on that. So I just think this is a great time to reflect on the in the overall situation and see, do we need a better plan and sit down and consider it? And I would encourage the GAA to do that. Now, it's supposed to happen. And I think if something good can come out of this, if we come up with a better plan for how we're playing our games at the moment, because the club player is suffering greatly under the present system, because we have two leagues, in effect. We're the National Hurling League, and then the All-Ireland Championship is essentially a league as well. And I think there's a way of doing it, and we put down a plan how to do it, and I think we can improve it for everybody. And it won't suffer, Gates won't suffer, in my view, either, and it can be done. And the GAA is well-funded, and I think we can well afford maybe to take a few hits on big games just to give the club player a better chance. Because, look, at in our game, it all goes back to your club. And on the All-Ireland final that we won, we had 13 different clubs represented under 15 players on the field. And that was also a great thrill to have that big cross-section across the entire county.
Liam, you've mentioned it there. If you were to look at it, like, I know it's not ideal circumstances, but there is an opportunity now. Like, you know, since being around Marie and getting involved more in sport, all you ever hear about is the fixtures and the toll that's put on the players. This is an opportunity, like you're saying, to get it right.
Yeah.
What area would you pinpoint?
I'd pinpoint the area that we have a lot of. We're great fellas at getting new competitions, but we're not very good at eliminating some competitions. We just need to get a blank canvas, is what we wanted to do, and sit down with some serious people. I'd even bring people from other sports in to look at the analysis of it as well. So from our perspective, you know, and you played and were a brilliant player yourself. You know yourself, when you were playing for Ireland, you were let off to play for Ireland from Munster when at a certain time. And so did that happen across the entire Northern Hemisphere. They do the same in the Southern Hemisphere. So you actually could keep your club game going as well as your international game going. We have not evolved to that level where we have a fair and honest and integrity within our club championships and our senior championships at a county level, unless we can keep both going in parallel and give both of them a fair win behind them. And that's only fair to club players and young club players in particular who want to be developed their game. Now, that's not a whinge fest. It's just a fact. And this is an opportunity to sit down and analyse it and get it done and get it sorted. It can't be done. No reason why it can't be done. And football needs to be looked at as well. Because even though some counties claim, and I played a lot of football, some counties claim that they all want to be in the Sam Maguire. Well, we came up with a system where they could all play a provincial Sam Maguire and it could be rolled into one major championship. And it can be done. And that's what I would say. Now that we have this hiatus and we have a stop, I think we should be seriously examining where we're going and come up with a proper blueprint to start next year with a whole new brand-looking GAA that's fit for purpose for everybody, if we're sincere about it. And I would encourage the GAA to do that. And as part of the CPA, I am encouraging the GAA to do that. And I think eventually it'll happen, but it's been so dragged out, it's a pain in the ass.
Well, I think, Liam, it definitely is an opportunity. And whenever it comes back, whatever shape or form it comes back in, we are all going to be really excited about it because we've been starved
exactly.
of it. And
exactly.
Liam, there is no getting away from the current situation that we're in. It's scary times for everybody and particularly business people. And as well as being a hurling manager, you're also a hotelier. How are things going for you right now?
Well, unfortunately, we have three hotels in Monart and Ferry Carrick Hotel in Wexford and Hotel Kinney, and all three are closed. And they're all closed in proper good governance and proper order with the HSE and everything else. And that's we're closed because it's the right thing to do. But of course, naturally, it's a big problem for business and for our employees and everybody else. And look, hopefully we'll get through it very quickly and move on. But we'll open when we're given the green light to do so. And hopefully we can get back to where we were. So it's a pity the way we are now. The recession, the economic recession, and get hit with that, and then you get hit with this. Not easy times. Not easy times for anybody in any business. So, look, we're all in it together. And if we all do what we're bloody well told, I think we can get out of it much quicker, you know. And I must say, the leadership in the country, across the entire country, all the parties have shown great leadership. And hopefully we can get out of it quick and get on to back into the hurling fields and have a good old row now and again.
Yeah, Liam, I think we'd all agree with that. But you've seen it both sides in terms of management of a team and now with your hotel staff. And look, it's different with sport because it's a game that we love and it's important. But when you're dealing with people's livelihoods, how have your staff reacted to the news, you know, that they mightn't, you know, get paid this week or month?
Well, actually, my sons are running the business more so than I am now. I'm the chairman. You get, that's what happens. You don't get all, you get kicked upstairs and then you get kicked out.
The good ones
you get
do.
Kicked out. But I like all of us. We have a very like we're a family group, and we have a lot of to make sure that we get the best possible deal for our own people. Now we can't do everything because in our business, if there's nothing coming in the back door, it can't come out the front door, or nothing coming in the front door, it can't come out the back door. So this is a balancing act to try and make sure that everything is done right and that we're fair to everybody, fair to all our employees, and hope that our loyal customers will come back and stay loyal to us. And it's not an easy ride for anybody, but we've good HR people and they've worked hard on us up to now. And the government's new initiative is definitely a big help as well. In fairness, it's a big help. But I think we owe it to our own people and to our customers and everything else to abide by the proper rules, and we've done that. And hopefully we'll come out. And I'm quite satisfied. We have a good, strong business. We'll come back again. Look, I've seen so many recessions. Like, you know, I was in London when I worked for Bord Fáilte, and I was in London when the bombs were going off in Ireland when we decided to blow up motor cars and kill all people around us. And we were at that crack at that time. And we were involved with trying to get Irish tourism off its knees and going around London trying to drum up business. It wasn't easy for Irish people, but that was the start of it. And then I came back on business on my own. You had bank strikes, we had the stuff in the 80s. So look, life's like that, and that's the way it is. And business has to follow the cycle of life, and that's what our business has done. And we still managed to stay going and run a thriving business that we're all proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. Liam, hopefully we get back to normality soon, and that hurling and football are right in the heart of it. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
No, it's my privilege, and thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Liam.
Thank you, Maria. We're
going to take a quick break.
Game on 2FM.
OK, that was brilliant, Liam Griffin, and we're staying on GAA. The main topic that we discussed last night was London's involvement is in the balance, looking forward to this year's championship. And we're delighted to be joined by their bonus store, Michael Maher. Michael, how are you?
Donegan, very well, yourself?
I'm very good. Michael, we chatted a bit before when you came into the role, and we'll go on and chat about what's going to happen with the championship shortly. But we're hearing about Boris Johnson, we're hearing about everything in London. How are you getting on over there? How's everyone in London?
It's obviously a very difficult situation for all over the world by reading the news and listening to reports, but thankfully, kind of everyone involved in our setup is okay at the moment. We've heard of no reports of any of the lads or backroom being sick, but clearly it's affecting thousands and thousands of people across the country. And I guess sport takes a real backward step at times like this.
It really does, Michael. But the GA, we know from here, it's providing a lot of solace for people just in terms of the support that it's giving to communities. But over with you, it's a little bit different because your players, a lot of the players on your team right now, aren't at home. So does it kind of put a little bit of extra responsibility on you, knowing that you have a whole group of players and a lot of them are away from their families and they're trying to live their lives in this current crisis?
Absolutely. Look, the thing is, we're so spread out over here. Like, there's probably 100, 150 miles in between all the players. So that network of support that the clubs are able to give at home to each other, I guess we can't do. But look, we're staying in touch with all the lads. They're doing kind of their own individual workout stuff, and we've been in touch with them to say if they need any support. In terms of anything in their lives, all they've got to do is shout, and we'll obviously help them ourselves, or we'll access the help that they need. But look, I'm very much aware this could have an impact on some of the guys might end up going home if the situation affects their work. And I think it will probably have an effect on clubs in London in general, that it's going to be such a unique situation, as you say, where a lot of the clubs in London do have a majority of Irish-born lads that end up probably going home for the foreseeable future. And it could have an impact on their playing numbers, but I guess we're taking it day by day at this moment in time ourselves, and we're giving the lads as much support as we possibly can.
Michael, when we chatted, you just come into the role, and we've gone through it, London-born but Irish to the core, and maybe what Marie's just saying there, that kind of community spirit, have you seen that the GAA, that your club, that everyone involved is pulling together now?
Look, I think all clubs are. I think especially with the clubs in Ireland, you see that leading by example, really, where they're going out helping older members of their community. I guess the real difference we have here in London is the numbers of members in clubs is nowhere near as extensive as those in Ireland. And I guess kind of when players move on from clubs over here, they end up moving home. So really, clubs are made up of current play members, a few committee members. So the numbers are a hell of a lot smaller. But look, I'm sure I'm hearing it with my own club, and I'm sure all the other clubs, they are providing support to their kind of active communities as best they can. But it would be nowhere on the size, the scale that the clubs in Ireland are able to do and need to kind of do, I guess, at this moment in time.
And Michael, just on the fixtures, we know that it's a situation that is constantly evolving. We saw that the game was postponed yesterday. It was called off, really. And then the Connacht Council today clarified that the fixture is postponed. It's not scratched entirely. It's kind of difficult to work with the parameters when everything is changing. It must be difficult for you.
It is certainly. Look, it was obvious it was going to get called off, especially when the Galway New York game got called off. But when we started to see the situation evolve over here, it didn't take a genius to work out that game didn't have a chance of going ahead. I personally thought it could be a situation where New York and London would be kind of discounted for this year if the kind of situation in Ireland and England is obviously going on two different paths at the moment, and London itself is on a different path to the rest of the country. So I think it can't be managed or guessed by anyone at this moment in time. The good news for us is Croke Park have obviously said they still want London to be involved, but I think it's totally out of their hands. We would obviously still like the game. The lads would like the game. The lads are still preparing as if there's going to be a game, but whether there'll be a game or not is completely out of everyone's control. And it's something that you can't get too worked up about because, as I said, look, if everything was normal and right, we would be involved. But if it's not, then look, there's far worse things that could be happening to the lads and ourselves at this moment in time. And you have to accept that.
We love our crystal ball here on the show. If you were to predict, do you think that you will be involved in Championship this year?
I don't think we will. I think it's such a... It's a scary situation, and numbers are kind of creeping up massively here day by day. And you look at the numbers here compared to Ireland, they're astronomical. And listening to kind of Croke Park, they would like the Championship to resume middle of June and kind of stick to the dates as a rough guide of what they've got at the moment and get it played out by the end of August, early September. I still think it will be very, very difficult for games in London to resume in the middle of June the way things are going. But if it was to be a situation where things in Ireland changed and got a little bit more serious and they said, well, it was going to go out to a straight knockout competition and it would be August, September, then I think we would have a chance. But if they're talking about the middle of June being the date they would like to resume the Championship at home, I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult when you look at the way the situation's escalating over here at the moment.
Michael, that must be so hard for you personally and your team.
Look, it isn't. Of course, we would love that game to be going ahead, but I think if the whole group and all the lads' families come out of this unscathed, that would be the biggest result we could have this year. But absolutely, we would love that game to be there for ourselves. London would traditionally peak at the end of the league into the Championship, and it's a huge day for London. And especially for the county board, look, the Connacht Championship Day is a huge, huge game for the county, having 4,000 or 5,000 people come through the gates. It's a day that a lot of people look forward to. And look, please God that this situation does allow us to have that day, because I think it would lift a lot of people's spirits within London that have obviously gone through this experience that no one could have ever envisaged. So I do think if it's in the middle of June, it's going to be very difficult. But I hope that we can still be accommodating in some way in the Championship.
Yeah, that would be fantastic to see. Michael, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Stay safe and mind yourself.
Thanks, Donica. Same to yourselves.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, we're going to take quick break and then we're back with Vinnie Perth.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Donica. Donica, that's tough now for the London football team, just not knowing and being away from home. I've been over there to Ruislip before, and Michael had mentioned the great day out when they get to play a Championship game there and what it means to people, and just the sense of community that it gives them. It's a brilliant place over there. You know, it just really, even though it's in London, it feels like it really captures the essence of the GAA over there. And I really feel sorry for those players who are now cut off from something that gives them so much comfort away from home. Like, we still have it here all around us. Yeah. I mentioned earlier, all my husband's pals from the GAA club driving past the house to wave. You don't get that over there. It's hard.
And what happens as well, Marie, and you know from travelling, you become more nearly homesick. You miss it so much. You start listening to Irish music way more. You wear your green jersey more. You become prouder. So, and it's your chance to reflect where you're from and your community and what you're about. And Michael's a perfect person to chat about it. Like, born and bred in London, but an Irishman true and true. And it would be very disappointing for him. But I thought it was so interesting from him to just actually say, you know, that he doesn't think it should, or, you know, could go ahead. You know, it's amazing to hear all these sports people who were fierce competitors the whole time just sitting back and saying the right thing needs to be done.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a few texts in about our guest and a few reminders. One is that today should have been Daffodil Day and we should give them a shout out. There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it must be so tough for that. We're seeing it with every industry, but in particular charities, and the Irish Cancer Society do an incredible job. So hopefully people get behind them. I know they could go online and help out in any way they possibly could. We've another one here, Marie. Spreading slurry here with the lads. We could surely make a sport out of this. That's from Podge in Wexford. I'd watch that.
I wouldn't rule it out, Podge. I'd get practicing now. You'd never know. It could happen.
The stink, though. Could we live with the smell?
We probably could if it was a bit of sport.
Yeah, that's true.
Get him to chase down a ball. Now, moving on to the League of Ireland, we know that it is on hold until mid-June at the very earliest. We're hoping that it will come back anyway and that it will run until December. But it is a very challenging time for everyone involved. And we are joined by Vinnie Perth, Dundalk manager, just to chat about the issues facing league clubs and, of course, managers. Vinnie, how are you?
Everybody keeping?
We're good. Yeah, we're all good here. I think we're good anyway, Dunica.
Good, yeah, same here.
We're great, Vinnie. We're great. How are you keeping?
Wasn't too bad until you linked to the slurry spreading straight into me. So not sure about that one.
We're used to people talking shite, Vinnie, the last few days.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So, Vinnie, how are things? Like, you're a football manager. There's no football. That's your job. What are you up to?
I suppose it's funny. You get... it's strange because it's probably a busier time, and you realise that you are actually a manager of people, and was probably somewhere around the region of 30 people, sort of, for want of a better word, working for me. So, and they've all got, you know, their own concerns and things going on in their life, and with the world gone so scary at the moment for people, you are their first point of contact, and then you've got to manage that situation with your board and your owners. And so it's been a very busy time. I've been in the ground probably, you know, every day since the news broke, probably in the last sort of 10 days, and there's always something to do. And, you know, you feel like as a modern-day coach, I think you've got to, like, there's three different types of them, I feel. You've got to coach. You've got some people who are coaches and some people are managers and some people are real leaders. And it's at times like this, people are probably looking for you in a way to say what's he doing and what way is he managing this situation, and then that's your chance to become a bit of a leader, I suppose, at the moment. So that's the way I see it, and it's an opportunity to lead and give people a bit of guidance around this time. That's the way you're dealing with it, you know.
Vinny, they're the real moments of leadership, though, aren't they? Because players are so self-driven. You know, you tell them what to do, they're normally so good. But change the environment now, and you mentioned it, it's greater worries. It's about families, friends, things that are beyond sport. It's trying to lead from that point of view.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the doctor can't answer a certain amount of questions, so how can I? You know, we bring the doctor and say such and such is asking a certain question around this, and the doctor can't answer it because it's such a, the virus is what it is. How can I? But I suppose you've got to lead by example. You know, things like our training ground, like being, you know, giving our groundsman a hand up on the training ground, or, you know, we've been painting walls, the staff has, and it's, you know, Oriel needs a little bit of work, don't get me wrong, but you're just setting an example. You're doing it all in a safe way, and
Like I said, and this would probably make good sense to you, Donica, you've probably worked under people who are just coaches. That's all they want to do is coach. And you have to do a little bit of management, obviously, because, you know, they've to pick the team. And then you've got some people who are real managers, and they want to know everything from the time the bus leaves and what people are eating and what times. And they'll do a little bit of coaching. And they'll be, and all of that is, you know, that's the modern-day coach. But they'll all have a little bit of leadership in that. So I see this as a real challenge for me, and it's something new. So it's probably something I can learn from and in a strange way take a positive out of it and tick another box and sort of someone who's young and starting out as this is my chance to put what I would have read in leadership books or what my sort of personality is from a leadership point of view. So you try and put that into practice now. So it's been interesting and it's been a good learning curve for me.
Finny, we were speaking yesterday about Jurgen Klopp's approach and that initially he treated it like an international break, gave his players some work to do, but now they've kind of all started coming together. They're linking up on screens and doing their sessions together. They're doing video analysis. They're getting their food delivered. They're trying to reconnect as a team. What's your approach like?
Yeah, it's been very similar. I think that's a good analogy is that it was like a, you know, mid-season break because we were expecting, even though I didn't think it was going to happen, we were given dates of early April and I had to plan as if we were playing Sligo in 2.5 weeks, even though we had people with a lot of fears and the virus is just breaking. And but we had to plan that we were going to be playing a game. You had to. That was the way your mind was working. That's difficult. So we had people on individual plans. We had small, like we've four lads who were living together in a house in Dundalk. So they were able to train together and with small micro groups of ones and twos. And just trying to keep people right. And the modern day athlete is completely different now. They don't really want downtime. So you're trying to manage that. And there were some people actually doing too much. And we were following their GPS unit saying, you need to slow down. And they were putting themselves at risk of injury. So it was all of that. We just sent them new nutritional plans because what they would normally eat compared to what they can eat now are two different things because they're obviously not burning off those calories or they're exercising a different way. So, again, it's all that management. And there's people there, obviously, to give me a hand with that in terms of our strength and conditioning and our physios and doctors. But there's a lot of work like that goes on. And again, I've got to be training these players from the physical and the mental point of view that around August time, we'll be playing, end of July, we'll be playing Champions League football most likely. So they've got to be ready for that. And being League of Ireland standard is probably not good enough for that time. We've got to be above that. So, we've got to have them doing as much as they can when they're away from the ground.
Finny, it's amazing you mentioned that there, but measurement is so important, and you mentioned the GPS. Can you give us, you know, without going into massive detail, just broad strokes, how are you measuring the players at the moment?
Yeah, well, like, the GPS is an interesting one because we work with StatSport, so, you know, they'd be famous, and there'd be a couple of companies like that, but you'd see them on jerseys, and you question, like, I spent the off-season questioning that side of the game because, you know, you'd see in a Champions League game somebody walking off the pitch and they'd say he's covered 10.5k. But when you really delve into it, ultimately it comes down to, yes, distance is important, but sprint, high-speed running, explosive distance, and these are all, you sort of need to know them and understand them. Yeah. And then
Vinny, we had that as well, and it was a bit of a curse at the start because everyone just competed in metres, and it wasn't until we worked out it was repeated high-intensity efforts was the measurement we were looking for. But that's very difficult to do on your own.
It is, but when we set them specific training drills, so again, you could probably have a full show on GPS. It is quite interesting.
There's an idea.
Myself and Donica in particular, because, you know, you do get the thing where one player might say, oh, I ran 10K today and you only done 9, or you get all this messing, or I reached 9.2, I'm quicker than you, and you get all these jokes. But ultimately there's the further or the more it's becoming into the game,
And coaches are starting to challenge the strength and conditioning coach why you're throwing these numbers at me. And they're asking the football questions. So when you design a drill, like what a fullback would do compared to a number 10 are two different things, and they've got to train differently. So we would set them certain drills, and once they're able to hit certain markers, so we'd know that our rifle, his top speed is about 9.8. So at the moment, we don't need him doing anything near 9.8 because that's at his maximum level. So we're able to say when you're doing your sprints, we would rather you around 7. And that gives him, we're able to tell him what 7 is or 7.5. So it is the technology helping us train athletes for the exact position designed about keeping them from getting injured, to be honest. So that's why it's really, really helpful.
Vinny, everyone who's involved in sport, whether it be working or even just fans, we're all missing it. What are you missing about it most?
Well, I suppose for me personally, and to be a coach, you especially at the when you get to a certain level, you've got to be obsessed by it. So if you're not obsessed by the football, the matches, the training sessions, if you're not sitting at your table at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, watching over a video from the game before or the team you're going to play, you have to replace that with something. So for the last sort of 10 days, it's been easy in the sense of I've had other things to do from the management point of view and where the club was at. But it's getting more and more difficult. So the garden is starting to look a lot better than it would do normally this time of the year. You know, you do a certain amount of reading or you use the opportunity to improve yourself if you can. But beyond that, you're probably like the rest of the world, missing sport so badly, like whether it's losing out in the Six Nations, whether it's, you know, missing a bit of test cricket or whatever the case may be. So we're in the same boat. I probably feel more sorry for the athletes because the way, as I said earlier on, the way the modern day athlete is, and particularly our League of Ireland players, they've had November and December sort of as downtime. They now don't want downtime. They want to train. They're sort of. I listened to a couple of the Olympic athletes speaking on different platforms over the last couple of days, and you can sense that they were, you know, this year was all about getting for the Olympics. So I think athletes are going to struggle at the moment.
Yeah, well, Vinny, if you're handy with a wheelbarrow, you could give Billy a hand out in Marie's house. But just sticking to competitive edge sides of it, players are competitive. How you like? They will train, and you're right, they could overtrain, but they do need that competitive bit. They need the game. How are you going to manage that?
Yeah, well, when you're not group training, that's obviously difficult. There's sort of certain things we'll share, certain bits and pieces, but it's very, very difficult. Like ultimately, our group is player driven. They always have been, and I suppose it's their job sort of to create an environment that they sort of chase or they go after certain goals. But when you're not group training, it's very, very difficult. That's why I would always admire, you know, boxers or, you know, people who would be athletes who would train, you know, runners and that type of thing. Individual sports, like, I really admire what they do because that's the challenge. There's no real goal for our players at the moment. I've got to create one. And what drives our group generally is Europe. And the challenge for us now is being ready for Europe when the time comes. So they can't take the foot off the pedal too much, although it's difficult to train. So really, I've got to push on them and I've got to explain to them how important Europe is, and it's not as far away as they think. So really, that's going to be the motivational tool for us as a group. But to be honest, that's always been our goal. So therefore, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah. Vinny, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We wish you best of luck. Hopefully we'll all get sport up and going again, but it's good to hear that we're not the only ones keeping the clubhouse tidy and looking after it. But
for real,
so
it's going to be sparkling now when we do get back playing. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, well, look, we all know it needs a little bit of work, and so it needs to be done, and we're trying to make it as good as we can. So, best of luck and stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much, Vinny.
Thanks, Vinny.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're back with Brendan Fanning.
Game On
2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Okay, we're going to focus on rugby, and there isn't a lot going on the pitch, but off the pitch, the RFU have made $500,000 available to the club game. And to discuss this, we're delighted to be joined by Brendan Fanning. Brendan, how are you?
Good, Donica. How are you getting on?
I'm good. I know you're a massive AIL man, and really buy into the club scene. It was disappointed the way the leagues were stopped and the way that all came to a head. But this type of news is really good for the clubs, Brendan, isn't it?
Well, on the face of it, yes. But if you drill down into it, I wouldn't be so sure how good it is. I welcomed it initially kind of in the hope that this was the opening shot from the IRFU and that there would be more to follow, but I'm really not sure that's the case. There's no detail at all as yet, Duncan, on how the 500k is going to be shared out. So if you take it that there's 50 AIL clubs and roughly another 150 junior clubs below that, maths wasn't my strong suit at school, but you know that doesn't leave a whole lot of money. And the number of clubs who are really, really struggling is significant. And clearly, the higher you go up the food chain, the more those clubs are going to struggle because their expenses are higher because they've been spending more money on preparing teams and on physio and all the ancillary expenses that go with running a club. And not least insurance. Like it would cost about two or three K per adult team to insure a team for the season. Suddenly the last couple of months of the season are off. So there's no need to have insurance cover. So it's not at all clear whether the IRFU is going to try and get that money back on behalf of the clubs. I'd be really concerned that the IRFU are not grasping this. We spoke about this a week ago, if you remember, when they sent out the message to the clubs telling them that the season was over. Somehow they managed to ignore the fact that they should acknowledge the clubs, the pain they were going through. Then they came out with the 500k and they said, okay, they're getting on the right track now. Now my understanding is that there is no plan for them to follow up with more than that. That doesn't even begin to wash its face.
Brendan, it sounds grave just listening to you there. Like, consequences-wise, what do you see has been the major fallout here?
Well, it's already started. You have staff are being laid off, put on short time. Creditors are being negotiated with Marie from clubs who can't pay them. The insurance money is coming. The insurance premiums. Everywhere you look, you have clubs already in financial trouble, and then their bars close. So no matter what club you are, your bar is absolutely central to your revenue. Your club sponsor, your bar on match day, you might get a few bob at the gate, you might get a few bob, well, more than a few bob, depending on how big you are, at a pre-match lunch. That's all gone. Absolutely closed down overnight. And there is no money coming in.
It is tough, Brendan, and you mentioned it, but it's different for different clubs. They have to travel more. How's the best way to divvy out this pot?
Well, you can start with the AIL, but first of all, and I'm not lessening the fact that I'm sure there was pain in junior clubs around the country. The first thing the IRFU needs to do, Donegal, is examine, look at their own finances and the guts of the $28 million that they made last year, courtesy of the cash coming through from the land sale out in Newlands. The second thing they need to do is examine the makeup of the Irish Rugby Football Union. The makeup of the Irish Rugby Football Union is its clubs. Everybody who is on the IRFU currently, with excluding some of people who are co-opted, has come through the club and school system. Mm. What beggars belief is how these folks go in the door into the IRFU and somehow seem to submit to a green haze and forget all about the fact that they are club people first and foremost. And it is the clubs that are the bedrock of the game in this country. If you don't recognise the hardship that they're in, and if you don't pony up some serious cash to help them out of that, I don't know what kind of condition they're going to be in next season.
Well, hopefully this is a first step, Brendan. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We'll catch up next week. Mind yourself.
Now, Brendan Fanning there giving us the news on the club's tough times, Donica.
Yeah, those. Look, I think it's a step in the right direction. Of course, there's loads more to do, but hopefully we'll get there. Marie, that's all from myself and yourself. We're back on Monday at 6.
Game On 2FM.